June 30, 2020. It's a lot from Pedro's show.
Thank you. When I was growing up, there was always music in my family. My parents always bought records. I remember the 78s, and then when the dance set came into play around, I don't know when it was, late 50s, early 60s, then it was the 45s. And my first record as a kid I bought was Cliff Richard, Living Doll. That was the first 45 I bought.
And his band was The Shadows?
Yeah, Cliff Richard's in The Shadows, yeah. And, you know, it's, every weekend my parents would normally always have some kind of a little soiree where people would come around and be a kind of party going on, and always music playing. So it was always in me. It was in my system.
And this was Glasgow?
Yeah, it's a place called Clydebank. It was about 12 miles northwest of Glasgow. It's a shipbuilding town.
The big river's called Clyde,
where the Queen,
right?
Queen Mary was built, Queen Elizabeth, the QE2, and a lot of the warships and stuff were all built there. It got blitzed during the Second World War. The Nazis bombed it completely because it was a main shipbuilding and ammunition making. Singer's Sewing Machine Company had a huge big factory there, which was turned into an ammunitions factory during the war.
Glasgow really ain't on the water, except this big river called the Clyde, right?
Yeah, River Clyde, yep, that's right.
Yeah, so I got to tell you, there was a band from Glasgow that I went and saw young here in the early 70s, called the Sensational Alex Harvey Band.
Oh, God, yeah, yeah. I saw Alex Harvey Band a number of times in Glasgow, yeah. Amazing.
And what was the main gig? There was a theater downtown, right?
Yeah, the big theater was called Glasgow Green's Playhouse.
Okay.
Which was through I want to say 75, 76, and then it changed its name to the Apollo. And that was owned by a leisure company in Glasgow called Unicorn Leisure. They owned all the clubs, pubs, they managed bands. So it was a big entertainment company who I actually worked for a number of years. But the Apollo, or the Greens Playhouse, is when I first went there as a kid to see bands. It was like about a 5,000 capacity theatre. It was massive. The stage was about 12 foot high. And if you were in the front few rows, you used to end up with a crooked neck because you were sitting there looking up at everybody on stage. And everyone, the performers, I mean, they had to be really, really alert and aware of the height of the stage and the drop. You know, so you bet anybody had any bad eyesight and got too close, then they were off the edge. And a few performers did actually fall off. I remember doing a show there with Iggy in 1979, actually. And he was just, you know how he is on stage and how he was then. And I warned him before he went on. I said, look, whatever you do, just don't get too close to the edge of that stage, because if you fall off, it's not an easy get back up, or you might not even get up, you know. So he was very, very aware of it, and he kept his distance from the edge. But an amazing theatre, and when it was full, the place would be so alive. There was a circle balcony when people used to really bounce the whole corners of the balcony, because it was kind of like shaped in the middle where they used to have the projectors coming out of there. Right. And the whole thing would just like bounce up and down. It was an incredible experience. And I saw an amazing bunch of bands there. The first live show I went to.
Yeah,
there,
what was the first gig you saw?
It was 1970. I saw 10 Years After.
Alvin Lee,
yeah. And after that, I just kept going to loads of shows. I saw Derek and the Dominoes, yeah, Mott the Hoople, Emerson, Lake Palmer, yes, Leonard Cohen, just so many people. Just a great list of artists used to come through there, you know.
You know, I'm curious, because my 70s thing was all arena rock till the movement came. Were you going to clubs too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was there's a few smaller clubs in Glasgow, but it was a different kind of scene even then to what it became. I would say around about 76, 77, it started changing. That's when the whole punk thing came in. So there was regular, almost like bar lounge gigs were turning into clubs during the week to promote these punk shows that were coming through. And it was almost a show every day of the week somewhere. Wow. And venues that were popping up you never heard of before, or they used to be just like bars that you used to go to and drink. And then, just clubs were appearing out of nowhere. But I saw just an amazing bunch of shows, like going to like really tiny little sweaty 200 capacity clubs with virtually no stage, where the gear is set up on the floor, and you're right there up on top of the band, you know.
Yeah. What about the school? Because I remember playing at the school, one of the schools there.
The Queen Margaret Union was one of the main touring venues, and then there was Glasgow University,
yeah,
of course.
That's it.
Yeah. So the two union halls, Queen Margaret Union and the Glasgow University Union, were two of the main kind of medium-sized venues on the circuit.
Now, did you ever leave Glasgow to see gigs out of town?
Actually, not until I started touring, which was probably around about 75, 76, I started touring. And when I went when I was touring the UK at that time, I used to go to London a lot and do a lot of stuff down there, whether it be recording or TVs and some shows. And I saw a number of bands at Hammersmith Odeon at that time. I remember I saw the Commodores, like, I think I saw the Commodores about twice, which I loved at that time. And they were amazing.
Lionel Richie?
Yeah, he was in the Commodores, which was a completely different thing back then.
Oh, yeah,
then,
I know. Brickhouse, right? Funky.
Yeah, and it just, those first Commodores albums were just brilliant, you know, and I still listen to them, they're still fantastic.
Now,
and I love the production on them.
Sure. Now, you started in the racket as a driver?
Yeah, basically, going back now to, like, I want to say, 72 or 73. I used to have a Lambretta scooter, you know, those the mods had, and
Vespa.
I had a Lambretta.
Okay.
There was the Vespas and the Lambrettas. Those were the two.
Oh, okay.
Two scooters at the time, and I had a Lambretta. And anyway, there was a whole bunch of guys. We used to all meet up. There was about 15, 6 of us. We had Lambrettas, Vespas, whatever, and we used to just go and just drive around and all that kind of stuff.
But you weren't mods. You weren't mods.
Huh?
You weren't mods.
Yeah, it was kind of beyond the mod thing, though, at that time, you know, because people, like, well, I had really long hair. I had, like, shoulder-length hair. But you're still wearing parkas, just like the mods used to wear
okay.
in the 60s, you know. But it was a different thing, and it was, but you still, you had all these mirrors built up on the Lambrettas and long aerials and like, furry backrests and that kind of stuff. But it used to be great when it was, like, you're 15 or... I don't know, whatever, a whole bunch of you just riding through towns. And it was just all peaceful. You used to just go out and do it for drives. They were not looking for trouble or anything.
Right.
Although trouble used to come our way sometimes.
Uh-oh.
But anyway, some of those guys had a band together and they told me about it. And so I just started going hanging out and seeing them on weekends when they used to play in bars and clubs and stuff.
Yeah.
And from there, I started kind of helping them out with the gear, kind of became the roadie. When I became like 17, got my driving license, I was the guy driving the van. So I was driving the van, pumping the gear, setting drums up, setting keyboards up, setting guitar amps up, learning how to tune guitars, all that kind of stuff. So, and it just kind of progressed from there. And eventually I got into doing sound a couple of years later. And
I'm curious, what kind of van? You know, I'm into vans a little bit.
Ford Transit.
Oh yeah, that's what was over there when I first went there. Transit.
Yeah, that the original. Those were the kind of those were the transportation of choice at the time, which was a long wheelbase Transit.
Yeah.
Which was a double axle. Double wheelbase. So it would be split maybe like. Front driver and passenger seat, then you'd put maybe a row of bus seats or something, or airline seats in the back, and then boarded up from there, and then behind that was all your gear.
Yeah, that's how I do my Econolines.
Yeah, so that was, and there used to be like, you know, I don't know, 10 guys in there, and then all this gear, and completely overloaded. But that was how we used to go and do stuff,
well,
you know.
What about...
You carried backline and PA in there, you know.
Sure, yeah, right, the PA too, people don't realize.
You used to carry like WEM columns and, you know, WEM Audio Master, WEM Copycat was the effect unit. And that was kind of it, really.
Now, driving a scooter and driving that transit, a little different.
Yeah, a little different.
I want to play here. You know, remember that Tuller Current record, Live Stooges, Japan?
Yeah.
Well, we opened up. I didn't say what we started the show on, but we did Loose there, and John Coltrane doing Stairway with Stars. I want to play Down the Street.
We got a funny scooter down on the funny street, baby!
Reverser. rehearser. But that... Ow! Grab! Tiger tab. Bow tie. Flyby. Rattlesnake. Scale. Shake. Shut-eye.
Flat mattress. Well, I'm with a sun visor and a headdress. Well, I'm going to bed springs. I'm going to turn over the bed springs. And then when I get down to bed springs, I'm going to disappear. And go off in the bed fringe. Yeah. What about the dust people that hid by the curtains? Sue was on a little pillow, 2 inches long, on a silk pillow on top of the mantel and by the fireplace just to keep her warm. Singing that charcoal song. Yeah, singing that charcoal song. That all those presto logs gonna make her be, gonna make her be long. Took all that compressed sawdust just to keep her warm. Come and have a cup of warm song. Made bowl of maniac meal. My scissors and those hot water. The piteous Holt. Banana legs. Toast. Blank milk.
Well, you've done much, but you have to share your more with the muches. It's like pulling a jello tooth out of an isinglass skull.
God flower.
Thank you. cutest bad time to die ever seen. It was Asgard and Zelda in a drunken dream. They were frozen in time like a old magazine. It was so hard for me, for me to see what was true then, or not always true. Hey, before you walk away, tell me what it is that you really wanna say. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey,
what? Tell me what? Tell me what? What? Wash any of my necklace for shame. Wash any of my necklace for shame. My life's in tatters, my life's in tatters. My life's in tatters, my life's in tatters. Look at me, look at me, look at me. Look at me, look at me, look at me. Tell me what's what, tell me what's what. Tell me what's what, tell me what's what. For shame I'm reckless, for shame. For shame I'm reckless, for shame.
I fucking believe in fucking magic. This is fucking song about a year with a magic number. Pedro show, yeah, down the street. I think Tulare Current. Chaos.
Hey,
yeah.
Can I say, like, today, I don't know if this is going to affect things and you can edit this out if not, but it's Dave Alexander's birthday today.
Ah, you know his name. David Michael Alexander.
Yeah.
My name, Michael David Watt.
I know. Okay. Anyway, he would have been 73 today.
Yeah, and he had some great bass lines. And, I owe him a lot, and I know Ronnie and Scotty dug him. I remember asking Nick about him. He said, you better ask Ronnie, because he's his friend. And then another time he said, you know, he had a Volkswagen. And I had a Volkswagen, you know, Bug.
Right.
But he didn't like it because I think he was the only dude with a car.
That's right. That's right. Apparently he was the guy that had the family with money and he had the
car.
That's
right. That's right. So, but, yeah, big ups for you, Dave Alexander. And Cat Beefheart with some poetry there. Flat Mattress, Good for Cows, brand new. Return to Abbey, Deer Hoof, brand new. Farewell Symphony, Barris Whitfield, The Savages, I'll Be Home Someday. Recent Alley Cats, this hasn't even come out yet. It was me, not you. Kay Salida from Black Flag with Rest of My Days. Bilge Pump for Out of Leeds with Tilly's Balls. In 1969 from that Tokyo gig, 2004, Indian Stooges. So, now, you go from Glasgow to London. What about anything in between?
Well, in terms of what?
Well, yeah, because maybe there wasn't a lot of, yeah. Was there a circuit or some kind of thing?
No, I mean, I didn't go anywhere. I lived in Glasgow up until 1978, by which time I had toured all of the UK and toured a lot of Europe with one of the bands that I was working for, by which time, you know, I progressed through working with the various bands in Glasgow, all the kind of top-end bands, as it were, and ended up working with one kind of pop band who had a number one single in 1976 called Forever and Ever. The band was called Slick. Mizzure was in the band.
The guy from Ultravox.
Yeah, exactly.
This is the year I graduate school. Henry, you sitting on a paper sack or something? I'm hearing all this crunching.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm probably just moving.
You'll love it when you hear back on the show and you hear all this crunching.
I apologize.
No, so what happens with the Slick?
So yeah, I worked with them like, let's say 75, I think, through 77. Midge left the band and got a call from Glenn Matlock, who was starting a band called The Rich Kids.
Oh yeah.
And so Midge went off and joined The Rich Kids and started touring with them. They released a single and an album produced by Mick Ronson.
Wow.
And at that time, the remnants of Slick were a couple of guys who formed another band called The Zones in Glasgow. So I continued to stay and work with them.
Did for you about get to meet Mick Ronson?
Yeah.
What was he like?
A lovely, lovely man. He was a beautiful man. I couldn't say a bad thing about him. He didn't have a bad bone in his body. Just really, really lovely guy.
Yeah, great musician, but I heard that he was really nice in person.
Yeah, no, he was, for sure. So, anyway, Midge called me a few times, and he came up and visited me, and he said, look, I want you to come and work with Rich Kids, blah, 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 come and do this tour, and I wasn't really that interested to do it. At that point, I was just kind of a bit disillusioned and didn't really want to continue in this music business stuff. But anyway, he said, look, we've got a guy leaving, just come and fill in for a couple of weeks and help us out. And I went, okay, I'll do that. So I went on the road and I did this. It ended up being an 8-week UK tour of every club and shithole and university in the UK. But right in the middle of the punk scene, this was probably early 78. Mm-hmm. And it just... The excitement of doing those shows every night of sold out gigs just gave me such a buzz, and I loved every minute of it. Even though I get gobbed on, I get pushed on, it was just one of those things. And it was just being part of something that was happening at the time made me feel good. And
the difference between that and before was the clean shows.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Very clean shows.
Yeah, because character builder. Yeah, it's hard to keep the morale up when you're playing character builders.
Yeah. So yeah, as I say, that just totally turned my whole thoughts around, and I thought, I love this. This is what I want to do. I want to do more of this. So I ended up a few months later moving from Glasgow to London. And continued to work with the Rich Kids, and I was in and at the studio. And that's when I met Mick, because Mick was mixing some stuff, but he was doing extra tracks. But anyway, I met him a few times, and he actually came on the road and did a few gigs with the Rich Kids playing guitar, as well as Ian McLachlan from The Faces. So it was quite a lineup, and I was doing front of house sound for all those guys back then, you know. Okay. So that was a real buzz and a great thing to do.
You got to mix Mick Ronson.
Yeah, yeah. And I saw him actually. I saw him not long before he passed away. God rest him. I was working with Tin Machine with Bowie in 91 or 92, and Mick was living in Sweden at that time in Stockholm. So he came down to the show and he was hanging out in the afternoon with David. So I got to see him again and meet up with him again. And that was the last time I saw him. I think, I can't remember what year he passed away, but it wasn't long after that.
One of the guitar men was a guy named Reeves I got to meet.
Reeves Gabriel, yeah. Boston. Reeves is a lovely guy as well.
Yeah, Boston.
Big.
Yeah, I think he's playing with the Cure guys.
He is. He's with the Cure right now. Yeah, yeah. I saw him about a year and a half ago. He came to the Iggy gig at Finsbury Park with Queens of the Stone Age, and I was chatting to him for a while there.
He has a Reverend guitar, and my Reverend Watt Plower bass, the same company, out of Toledo.
Right. That's right.
That's how I met him. He's sweet guy. So, you did run into the Dam, though, right?
The Dam was much later. Well, I tell you, the Rich Kids management were managing Rat Scabies at that time. The Dam had kind of let. They'd come to the end. They'd either split up or Rat had left or fallen out of them. I can't remember which. But Rat had his own group called the Vicious White Kids. And I ended up working with him for a while as well. But I did go and work with the Damned later on. I think it was 85, I think it was. I worked with them about 90, 91. When they did the Phantasmagoria album and it kind of relaunched their career.
And the captain played guitar instead of bass.
Well, Captain wasn't even in the band at that time.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It was two
other
guys.
Oh, yeah, the Captain had some crash records.
He had his own kind of solo thing going on at that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. they had the Happy Talk was his big number one.
That's it. So you had something about Hey Captain, Say What? Hey Captain.
Yeah, that was another song.
Okay, so what happens between, then I jumped ahead too far. So between 78 and 85.
So 78, the Rich Kids were kind of coming to an end. They were all sort of starting to fall out with each other. The egos between Matlock and Midge were getting a bit, they were sort of clashing. So Glenn got a call, I think it was early 79, to as a bass player for the Iggy tour for New Values, the New Values tour. So he went, I think he auditioned or something. Anyway, he got the gig and he ended up bringing me on board because he didn't know everybody. He goes, if I can get you a gig on this tour, will you come and do this with me? And I thought, wow, we Iggy Pop, absolutely sure. Anyway, I went and had a meeting with the tour manager at that time and I got the gig. And so that was my first encounter with Iggy, was April 1979. And the rest is history, as they say.
Absolutely.
Because here I am.
Yeah, here you are. And here we are. We're at the end of the first hour. June 3rd, 2020, just to watch Peter show. Special guest, Henry McGoggin. Hold tight for hour two. June 3, 2020. It's the second hour of the Lot for Pedro show.
at you. And you are looking at me. Now wrap it, baby.
fans. We showed each other our guitars and played in this fancy way. All the numbers we added seemed to say fancy parties, to which we'll never be invited out to. But oh, I think we're something. I really want to talk about without interruption. Yeah, I think we're something. I really want to know about, but I know nothing.
Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. Sometimes you're up, sometimes you're down. That's why we call this song Dirt.
just.
Inside. Watt for Peter show. Start off the second hour with TVI, Stooges Live Tokyo. And Almite's Lament from Karam out of Canada. The extract, all this stuff's from Canada. Gregarious Phase, Killer on the Loose, which is Red Mass featuring Rick Froberg and Mac DeMarco. Chris Burns of Fancy Parties. And then back to Tokyo again, 2004 with Iggy Stooges and Dirt. Yeah, I remember Scotty would put water on his floor tom, so when he did that big roll at the beginning, very dramatic. Yeah. So you start working with Ig. The first tour is the New Values.
Yeah, 1979.
Now, what was it like touring with Ig compared to all the other years of touring?
Well, you know, it was kind of... To quote you, Econo, in some ways, certainly for the crew anyway. Let me tell you who was in the band. It was Scott Thurston was on keyboards and guitar.
That's the guy from Attack KO, people.
Yeah, and he ended up playing with Tom Petty for years and years. He was a kind of MD. Klaus Kruger was playing drums. He played with Tangerine Dream.
Yeah, I think he's the guy on Soldier, right?
Yeah, he played on New Values and he played on Soldier. So and then Glenn on bass, and then Jackie Clark, God rest him, he was playing guitar.
Okay.
So with that tour kicked off, I think April 79. It went on for about 8 weeks throughout UK and Europe. Band were traveling on a coach. We had one semi-truck of production and backline, just the whole thing was in there. And the crew were five people, which was me, front of house guy, monitor guy, lighting guy, and another on-stage guy, and driving a Ford Cortina Estate around Europe. That was what we did. Ford Cortina Estate.
Yeah, we don't have them over here, but they're tiny.
Yeah, I mean, it was a station wagon, basically, but, you know, it's like, but for five guys in there, and as I say, we covered a hell of a lot of miles through Europe in that car, and we shared the drive, and I did a lot of the driving with one other guy, but I was kind of like the crew boss or something at that time, so I was doing the on-stage backline. I was tuning guitars, setting up keyboards, and setting up drums, and looking after Iggy throughout his performance and doing... What Joe said ended up doing, running after him and straightening mic stands and pulling them out the crowd and doing all that stuff.
Well, when does Josh come aboard?
Josh didn't come aboard until 87, I think it was, okay. 86 or 87.
Okay. Yeah. And I got to tell you, people, listeners, this is the day of Carney. There was no EU yet. So touring in Europe was... It was intense. You could be hours at that border.
Lots of currencies and a carny, so you were you were at the border. The truck driver was at the border for as long as it took him to get through it.
And it could be hours. It could. Yep. It was intense. You know, it's still exciting to do and everything, but it's a reality. I don't think people. Well, it might be going back to that. Who knows?
Yeah, from the UK, it might well be. Yeah.
Oh man, I want to play here. I want to be your dog. Yeah, and these days we used to do it twice.
You want to do a fucking animal song? Ooh. Ooh, I want to be a fucking dog!
Thank you.
困った が自分が困った顔をしていることを知っているのでしょうか。知っている。困った顔をしているのであれば、困った顔をする余裕があるので、そんなに困っているとは言えないのではないでしょうか。やっと眠くなってきました。人がやってきました。
ballad originally penned for tune by the Josita Matadella. Very fine culture. Maybe over your head.
Simple.
Watts Peter Show.
Yeah, I want to be your dog. And now, this was the first time we did that evening. Stooges in Tokyo 2004. In the doghouse from Few, Tokyo Experiment Lady. Tripod Jimmy, that's got Tom Herman from Perubu. I've been doing some songs with Tommy Very Bad. Peter Lochner, Cleveland guy, big part, early scene. I'm So Fucked Up. And then finally, Real Cool Time, live Tokyo, Iggy and the Stooges. So, that first tour, it was like, this is happening, this is what I want to do. I mean, you wanted to tour besides you with Midge and stuff.
Well, halfway through that tour, Iggy's manager at the time was a guy called Peter Davis, who's an ex-record company guy, lovely man. He asked me about halfway through, he just said, look, we love the work you're doing, Iggy loves the work you're doing, we want you to work with us after the tour's over. We're going to be recording a new album, probably in Wales at Rockfield, and we'll be doing all the pre-production in London. Would you help us set all that up and do rehearsals, record the rehearsals, etc., and then be around for the studio recording? So I said, absolutely, yeah, I'm in. So James was the producer of New Values, as you know, and then he became the producer, or was to be the producer of Soldier. So we ended up rehearsing in London for a long time, and I'd got a whole little recording set up where I'd record 4-track reel to reel in the afternoon in the rehearsals, then mix it down into 2-track to a cassette and give that to James at the end of each day to take home and listen to. So we did that for a couple of weeks, and then ended up, went to Rockfield for, I don't know, however many weeks we were up there, and started the record.
And people were talking about James Williamson, and it didn't work out good though, right?
No, it didn't work out. A few things kind of happened along the way, and Mr. David Bowie turned up for a visit for a couple of days, and James was pretty adamant that he does not get involved in any of the recording in any way, or has any suggestions or to make. Which happened, and David managed to stay out of the way for a while, until one time James was trying to get the band to play a certain thing, and then there was a chorus thing that nobody could get, so David went in and kind of took over and got everyone to do his kind of version of how he saw the song, and I think the song was called Play It Safe, and that caused a bit of a ruck. James stormed out the session, and the engineer took over, who actually ended up producing the album, Pat Moran, who went on to become quite a famous producer.
That's right.
And again, he's no longer with us, God rest him. Cancer got him.
It was kind of out in the sticks, right, in Wales?
Yeah, it's in Monmouth, so it's like over the bridge towards Newport, I think it is, and... you hang it right, go to Monmouth. So, yes, it's like a farmhouse, basically, in the middle of nowhere. But very, very well laid out, and it was living in accommodation, and they'd bring in your food every day and stuff like that. But a great facility, and Simple Minds were recording in the other studio, in the other, I think the two studios. And they also had a mill house, which was... they had a big live room, like a dining room, and their Simple Minds did some of their tracks down there with the Rolling Stones mobile, and then they moved up into the studio to finish off the record.
Now,
but it still operates to this day, and still a lot of people record there.
Wow.
I think they just made a film of it recently, and I think it's either just come out or about to come out.
Now, how would you compare that work with tour work?
Studio?
Yeah.
Completely different. If you're used to being on the road and all the live stuff, it's you either love it or you hate it, I guess. I kind of adjusted, because for me it was something new to go and live in a residential studio, and particularly the type of record we were doing, the type of people we were working with, and it was just all a learning process for me. So I was just like a sponge taking it all in and just trying to be part of the whole thing. So I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
And you know, after that was he went off to do the American tour, Support New Values, I think it was in November. So I went on to become Iggy's front of house sound engineer on that tour.
And this is the one where David Bowie was playing some organ, keyboard?
No, he that was 77. He did the Idiot tour. Oh, that was before my time.
That's right.
Yeah. But David would pop in and out from time to time to shows, you know.
Okay.
So frequently.
But the band, okay. Ig's band changes up, right? He gets Ivan?
Yeah, it changed at that time. It even changed from the rehearsals in London to the recording to the end of the recording to going out on the road. So it started with Klaus on drums, Glenn on bass, Steve New on guitar, who was also in the Rich Kids, and Barry Andrews on keyboards, who was XTC originally.
Right.
He didn't want to go on the road to do the live thing. He finished the album. Steve finished the album. Ivan ended up turning up towards the end of the session, I believe, at Soldier in Rockfield.
Okay.
And I think he ended up playing on a couple of things. And then from there, he became... Steve had a bit of a fallout. He didn't want to do the tour either. Ivan then became sort of guitarist, keyboards to cover rhythm and what Barry was going to be doing. And then they needed a lead guitarist, so Brian James was brought in for that. From The Damned. So that was the band for America, was Brian James, Glenn, Klaus, and Ivan. So we ended up, we toured about 6 weeks North America.
Now you're talking about a lot of personalities.
Oh.
doing your work, Henry, and you're juggling these personalities, right?
Yeah, there were quite a bunch of personalities indeed. But at the same time, yeah. I mean, they certainly when it got to the stage part of things, there was definitely a lot of egos up there. But you know, off stage and the downtime, there was a lot of camaraderie and there was a lot of social time spent with each other. So there was a good sort of feeling, at least within the touring party. And traveling, so it wasn't like any high tensions or anything. It was still relatively pleasant to do.
Right, because I can imagine with all the other stuff, and then there's that.
Yeah, and you had the odd girlfriends tagging along, and girlfriend stroke photographers, and so you know how all those things go as well. So it was the extra baggage, shall we say?
The posse. The posse. So we get into what, the late 80s?
We're only in the end of 79 at this point.
Oh Christ, I'm sorry. Because I know in the middle of the 80s you go back and work with the Damned guys.
Yeah, when Iggy took a bit of a sabbatical at 83, I had to find some other work for a couple of years, so I ended up working with the Damned, I think, 85. I toured some for about a year or so with A Flock of Seagulls, would you believe?
Whoa, I remember those guys.
Yeah, which was also very interesting in many ways. And then I ended up going, the Damned gave me a call, and I went to work with them, which again gave me another lift and a boost of how enjoyable live touring could be and what was going on, you know.
You think it really matters on the band, right? It's not just like one size fits all.
No, it definitely isn't one size fits all. I mean, it's what your own personality is and what you are and what you like as well and what you like to be around is one thing. But, you know, if you're working with a whole bunch of people, A, you love the music.
Yeah.
Love hanging out with them. You love what they're doing. It just makes everything so much more enjoyable, of course, you know.
Right.
Very few times I've had to actually do work where I've had to say, oh, I got to do this for the money and I don't really want to do it and I'm embarrassed to be associated.
Like kind of I've tried to
stay away from all of that, you know. So I've been very fortunate. It's only ever happened to me a couple of times.
I think in the movie, like you don't have to use your name, right? It's Alan Smithy or something. You don't love that? You can pick this like generic name because you're embarrassed to be associated with
that. Sort of thing, yes.
Yeah. So I know by the early 90s you're back touring with Ig, right? He's back.
Well, by 87, 86 actually, when he recorded his first album, coming relaunch again, shall we say, which he did with David again, which was Blah Blah Blah.
Yeah.
That's when I came back on board. I mean, throughout his whole sort of period of getting well, shall we say, you know, we stayed in touch and you know, we would speak a lot, so he kept me informed what he was doing and what was going on and stuff, so it was kind of nice in that respect. So I got the call from his new managers at that time to let me know what was happening. The tour was starting up again, and you know, they wanted me to be back on board and stuff. So 86 I was back on board. 87 he took a break, and I think 88 where I went in to work with my management company who looked after The Fall. So I worked with them for a little while, and John Martin as well.
Oh wow, The Fall.
Yeah. Wow. So that was the time Brick Smith was in the band when she was married to Mark, around about the I Am Curious Orange album.
Okay.
Do you know that?
I kind of know it up to Grotesque, and I fell off. But
they did music for Michael Clark Dance Company, which was a live dance. Sorry, they played the live music to dance, contemporary dance, basically. So they did a world premiere, I think it was Amsterdam, where the band played way downstage, upstage, and behind the dancers. And it was pretty interesting concept, but it worked really well.
I wish I could have saw it. Look, we're at the end of the second hour, June 3rd, 2020, Dish Watt Peter Show, special guest Henry McGrogan. Hold tight for hour three. June 3, 2020. It's the third hour of the Watt from Pedro Show.
No fun! No fun! This is fucking Tokyo, baby! Big fucking tea, baby, baby! No fun, baby! Open the doors! I want the fucking air! Air! Give me air! Wake up! No fun, no fun, no fun, no fun, no fun.
To take a second look. Fair hair and a great customer service. Curly brown hair, raw bone and rosy cheeks. A looker and a way. Charmed, I am sure. I feel like an old man, though. Slower, but still having fun. Something I would appreciate a certain look from a woman. The attention of someone. I wonder what kind of life she has. With the uniform tossed aside and the hair finally down. What kind of woman would be non-judgmental and welcome my lack of experience? Let us look again at women, and I love my pine cone waitresses. I am so independent, but I like you. You carry me around in a certain sort of way, but I'm always... I'm old, so it is all very cool to justify someone's existence by appreciating them as you can. You just made me think again.
Thank you.
Pedro show starts the third hour with No Fun. Alien Studios in Tokyo, 2004, Shibuya X. Place with No Time, Return to Whatever. That's feature late great Richard Derrick here in honor of him. Joe Burr on a poem, Double Vision, finally 1970. I feel all right. Alien Studios, back with Henry McGrogan. I get to meet you in 2003 at Coachella.
Yeah.
Actually, it was in Hollywood.
It was in Hollywood at that rehearsal place. What was it called?
SIR.
No, it wasn't SIR. It was the other one.
Oh, was it? Okay. I thought it was on Sunset Boulevard.
No, it was the other one. What was it called? Oh, I can't remember. My mind's gone a blank. It's moved now. They're not there anymore. They moved somewhere else. But we used to... Swing House.
No, Swing House. Oh, okay. Because the Swing House I was at was with James Williamson. But anyway, I get to meet you there. But this is 2003, so you've been touring with Haig for like 10. And this is like his solo band. And it ended up with Whitey and his brother and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that during that period, I was kind of in and out. I was kind of involved from a distance and wasn't really on the road as much. I would pop in and out from time to time. But yeah, that was a whole different ball game with Whitey and whoever else was in the band at that
Larry,
time.
Larry for his brother. For a bunch, right? Larry Mullins.
Well, Larry was, he was way before. I was touring when Larry was still around. It's when a lot of changes happened with Whitey and Pete Marshall. I think Hal was still playing bass. And Whitey's brother, as you say, Alex, another one who's not with us, God rest him. So, yeah, I was kind of in and out of all of that because I was doing other things.
So, did you hear about me and Jay playing with the Ashton Brothers?
Yes, I'd heard about that.
Okay. And, you know, I was on tour with my second band, and they called me in Tallahassee. Told me, Ronnie said, you're the guy. It blew me away. So I go there, and we do that gig, and that's the first of 125 months I get to do.
Yeah. Well, I remember when they told me it was happening, and I just said, I've got to be there. No matter what, I've got to be there. So Art, who, again, his manager at the time, God rest him, he's no longer with us.
Great guy.
Art called and said, no, you got to be there. So myself and Joss, we flew out to Los Angeles. And, rehearsal was the first time I met you and Eric Fisher as well, I think it was.
Yeah, who ended up the road boss.
When you guys started playing those songs, I just melted. I mean, the hairs stood up in the back of my neck and my arms. I thought, God, finally I'm hearing these songs, how they should be played, after all these years of his other bands playing the songs, which sounded okay. But when the Ashton Brothers and yourself just kicked in with those, it just blew me away. I was just like, this is it. This is how it should be. This is fantastic, you know?
And, you know, I had done a lot of tours and stuff, but getting to play with you guys and it wasn't, of course, Ashton Brothers and Ig, beautiful brother Steve, but you and Josh, man, I've never really toured like that.
Yeah.
And, you know, I helped the Porno guys out. I had actually met Eric Fisher. He was doing that for Jay Maskus, but I only helped out a couple of bands before. I'd never done that work, side man. And I got to tell you, it was real honor to get to work with you and Josh. And at that time, Rick Hart. And later on with Max, a beautiful guy. Yeah. I mean, and Andrew and people that you would bring in. Man, you never brought in flaky people.
They were all good people. People we've known through the years who we knew personality-wise would fit in. Plus, they were just good at what they did, you know.
Absolutely.
And Eric, I'm so blessed to have met Eric. He still works with us to this day.
Yeah.
And he's such a great guy. He really is.
Man, and I never had any experience with that, except for, like, hearing Bad Rumors. And then to actually do it with guys that were fucking happening. I was so grateful. So grateful to you guys. I mean, it made a huge, huge impression on me. I'm going to play the last music for this edition.
Funhouse! it down. We're gonna separate.
Now feels to be something other than an empty vessel, always at the wheel. They say there's no place like home, but we keep looking for as long as we roam. They say there's no place like home, but we keep looking for as long as we roam. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
for Pedro Show last music for this edition. Phonehouse, Iggy and Stooges, Live Tokyo 2004, Bark. Now, some Knoxville stuff. I've been having a lot of them bands on the show lately. Home, Little Bitch, and aside from Old Man Fuck You. Midnight Bomber Without Bombs at Midnight. LaSalle Desang. El Tren Fantasm. This is part 4 or 5 of Alvaro Domine and Henry Kaiser. Henry does a lot of skin diving in Antarctica for work. And then finally, Little Doll. Now, this ain't the one. This is Tokyo one. But the one at the, God, what was that called? Lowland Festival. I got knocked over. I kept playing that. I didn't stop.
Yeah, and I was just talking to someone about that the other day. Funny enough, I remember that.
You know, and After 2 was very heavy. But in the back room and a big talk, and Ig stuck up for me. And here's the guy, you know, everybody thinks wanted to kill me. I know he wanted to work the show and shit, and I shouldn't have been out that far starboard anyway. But I didn't stop playing. Even when I hurt my knee, I didn't stop playing. I love Stooges so much. Now, Henry, you've been living in Warsaw. How long now?
21 years.
Okay. You want to say anything? Because last time you were talking about living, it was in London, right?
No.
I thought you said you moved from Glasgow to London.
Well, yeah, London. But then I moved to the country. I moved further south to a place called Hurstmonceux, which was a small village in East Sussex near the coast. So I was pretty much in that area until about 97, 98, split up with my first wife, and then relocated to Warsaw at the end of 97, 98. So, yeah, that's actually 22 years.
Yeah. And then in Warsaw, you got a company, CEO.
Yep. We formed in 2000 and, oh God, what was it, 3 or 5? I can't remember. Okay. I think 2005, I think it was. Anyway, we just had to start a company here with my partner, Anya. Her background was a record label. She worked with Warner. She knew a lot about live stuff as well. So we just kind of thought we'd try and promote Polish artists abroad, as it were, at that time. So we get involved with a couple of bands, a band called Miss Lovitz, who actually opened up for the Stooges a couple of times. Helping them out, as well as a couple of other bands that we tried to along the way. And then we ended up managing Scalpel, who was signed to Ninja Tune at the time, electronic duo. And then most recently, Zamilska, again, electronic. She's more of a producer. I need to send you some of her music.
Yeah, please.
And in the meantime, we were doing sort of booking agents as well. So we were a booking agent for Marianne Faithfull for about five or six years, maybe even more. Also, Irish band Clannad. Portuguese fado singer. Lots of pretty versatility in terms of what we were doing. And yeah, Marianne just made it through the COVID thing. God love her. She's a fighter.
And if people want to find out, it's CEO.org, right?
CentralEuro.org.
That's it. Central Euro.
Central Euro.
CentralEuro.org.
Yep. Central and then Euro like the currency .org. CentralEuro.org.
Right. Henry, man, it's been a great honor to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thanks for asking me.
And like I was saying, getting to 125 months here with you, beautiful. And you know, you keep on keeping on. You're an inspiration to me. And
I want to keep on keeping on, and that's what I say to everybody else as well. So, you know, it's I will keep on keeping on until I can't keep on anymore.
So the wheels fall off?
There you go.
It's been the June 3rd, 2020, just Swap Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.